Hello, and welcome to the Nature Inspired podcast. I'm your host, Emma Hawthorne, a budding conservation biologist, performer, and yogi. Before we begin, I would like to pay my respects to the traditional owners of the land I am sitting on today, the Yugambeh language region. And I pay my respect to elders past, present, and emerging. This week is an uncomfortable topic. It's about environmental injustice across the globe. So I've decided not to record in my little cozy soundproof walls and decided to do it with the door open. Hopefully we might get some birds. We could potentially get some cars. We could get some machinery in the background. But anything that helps to calm us, because it is going to be probably my most uncomfortable episode that we've had. But I do truly believe that from discomfort comes change. And we all need to make changes in our lives to continue living in this beautiful, beautiful planet that we currently have. So no one wants to hear, let alone acknowledge, that slavery still exists, or that people across the globe are starving or dying from droughts. We're seeing so much of this on the news, and I can honestly say that often I just want to switch off, turn off, pretend it doesn't exist. It's easier just not to think about it. Yet there are some empowering choices that we can make to ensure that we don't exacerbate these injustices in the world. Even though many of these injustices, which we're going to talk about, are embedded into our modern Western society, there are ways that we can make change. So in this episode, I'm going to focus on injustice and inequity amongst people, so humans in the globe, though I am going to do an episode on injustice and inequity across more than humans, so our plants and animals and ecosystems, in a future episode. So this episode is inspired by a few official days that have taken place in the last few weeks. One is from June 12th, the United Nations World Day Against Child Labour. And the other is more recent. It was on July 18th, Nelson Mandela Day. Now, the Nelson Mandela Day I'm going to talk about now. I'll talk about the Child Labour Day a little bit later in the episode. But Nelson Mandela Day is a day that we pause, create awareness of, and take action against racism, discrimination, embedded colonialist structures, and inequality. It's a day to also help improve human rights and justice for all people. We're actually currently in the Nelson Mandela Decade of Peace. It's running from 2019 to 2028. Now, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and the interviewer made a really good point that when you get a product free, you're not really ever getting a product free. If you think about where it's come from, the mining of the resources, maybe the metal or the chemicals that go into producing that, the laborers, the people who ship and transport the items, it's never really free. And we have to consider if something we are getting for free is actually binding someone else. There is a great video called The Story of Stuff. You can watch it for free on the YouTube. It's about 20 minutes. And it's great to see where our stuff comes from and where our stuff goes. It shows that we are not paying for what we buy. Mining, production, factories, transport, shop owners, all have to be involved in order for us to get a product. And we have to ask, who really did pay? It's the people who lost their natural resources. Perhaps they had their local native forest logged for that resource, or they lost their land so a mine could explore. It's the people who put their health at risk in factories and mines, in dangerous situations, inhaling toxic chemicals to produce the products. And it's often the underpaid or minimum wage transport workers that get it from A to B. So whenever we get stuff for free or stuff really cheap, we're never really getting it free. And Nelson Mandela has this fantastic quote that really brings this into light. For to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. And that is basically why I've done this podcast. It's because even if we are living free, we might have access to free and cheap goods. We have to wonder if we are in fact binding someone else in our choices. Now, shifting topics a little bit, but staying on this idea of environmental injustice, I'm going to talk about climate change. So we often think of climate change as being an economic and environmental issue, but it's also societal and health related, and climate change affects people across the globe disproportionately. We do not have equality in how we are impacted by the effects of climate change. And so sometimes that can disconnect us from wanting to make any immediate changes. We have seen an increase in floods and wildfires across the globe. So a lot more people are starting to realize just how impacting climate change is and will be. But on the days like today where I'm sitting, I have a beautiful cool day in winter. There's not a cloud in the sky. There's no floods. There's no risk of fires today. I'm feeling quite safe. So it's on these days that it's the best time when we're feeling calm, we're feeling secure, to start to take action. Even the Pope has recognized that climate change is not just an environmental issue. He said, "We are not faced with two separate crises, one environmental and the other social, but rather one complex crisis, which is both societal and environmental." Now, if we look back between the period of 1800 to 2010, the US made up 25% and over of global carbon emissions. They were followed by Russia, China, Germany, UK, Japan, India, France, Canada, and Poland. The rest of the world made up only 25%. So we can see that emissions are not equal across the globe. In the past, carbon emissions have predominantly been from industrialized countries. But this is also changing as developing countries such as China and India have higher rates of population, and as they develop, carbon emissions are going up. However, in saying this, in a recent report by the IEA in 2022, emissions in China have decreased and in Europe have decreased. So there are parts of our globe that are starting to bring their emissions down, but we have a long journey to go. There's also a big difference between emissions that are made by production and consumption. And so we often find when there is carbon accounting, so when businesses, governments, organizations, researchers, scientists, data people, trying to figure out carbon and how much carbon is being emitted, it's often a bit of a gray area, because where a product is made bears the CO2 emissions, not where the product is consumed. So in developed nations, which consume quite a lot of resources, they are not accounting for the carbon emissions used to make those products. So we see a lot of inequity, and carbon offsetting and carbon accounting can therefore be really confusing, and it can also be very misleading. So even though some of the developing countries have high emission rates, they have much higher They have much less rates of consumption. So let me say that again. So even though some of the developing countries have high emission rates, they have much less high rates of consumption. And in Australia, unfortunately, we have one of the highest rates of consumption per capita in the globe, basically equal to the US. Poorer developing countries also tend to suffer more because they're often in areas that have more extreme conditions, maybe really hot conditions. They often rely on agriculture and mining, and therefore a lot of their work exposes them to toxic chemicals and dangerous mining ways of producing resources. And they also have less ability to access things such as cooling and heating systems, emergency assistance, insurance, and they also lack the money to be able to mitigate climate change, i.e. try and make some changes to minimize how affected they are by climate change. There's also a lot of people that live on the coastal regions that are going to be impacted by climate change. At the moment, they estimate that 190 million people live below the high tide level that is predicted for the year 2100 in a very conservative prediction that takes into account Antarctic ice remaining stable. So some places that may become inundated include parts of China, Bangladesh, Indonesia, and Thailand. This is why the Tuvalu minister, Simon Coffey, from the Pacific Islands, addressed the UN at COP26 in the ocean almost up to his waist to show that the Tuvalu Islands are sinking. In fact, many island nations are facing severe threats to their homelands. Here in Australia, in the Torres Strait Island, sea levels are rising at twice the global average, and many people living on the island are First Nations people who not only risk losing their homes, way of living, and ways of making an income, they also risk becoming climate refugees, which would result in a loss of identity and loss of cultural connection with the islands that have been home for them for over 65,000 years. As Torres Strait Islander Waduam Pabai Pabai told The Guardian in 2022, "This island is me, and I am this island." This leads us to intergenerational equity. So you might ask, what intergenerational equity? The UN offers a few definitions, and one of them is the right to development must be fulfilled so as to equitably meet developmental and environmental needs of present and future generations. So it's basically ensuring that anything we develop now has to be able to support and sustain present and future generations. Now, even though this is often related to development and is often referred to in development applications such as mining and also environmental impact assessments, I like to also think that as individuals, we also have a duty of care to ensure that we leave this world better than we found it, to ensure our children and the next generations have access to the beautiful planet that we get to experience today. I mean, it's crazy to imagine a world where a child has to visit a museum to know what a tree looks like. Just thinking of that is just horrifying to my soul. Now, some good news in this arena is that a recent court case in Australia actually enabled a Clive Palmer coal mining project in Queensland to be denied. So this case was led by First Nations youth between 13 to 30 years of age, and they were known as Youth Verdict. And it was found through this court case that, and I quote, "approving the application would risk disproportionate burdens for future generations, which does not give effect to the goal of intergenerational equity. So basically, it was the first time that human rights came into consideration with climate change issues, and the first time that a mining development was denied on this case. Now, I just recently signed a petition in the region I live in, the Gold Coast hinterland, for halting further extraction of groundwater in a World Heritage listed rainforest area. And one of the reasons that I signed this petition, there were many reasons, obviously environmental, but also because of intergenerational equity. Extracting water for the purposes of profit denies future generations of people, plants, and animals their right to clean fresh water. So being irresponsible now denies the health of the future generations, and we really need to take that into consideration with every choice we make. And now we move into what may be the most difficult part of this podcast, but we're going to be brave and we're going to go into the discomfort to discuss it. Child labor. So child labor is something that we know exists, yet obviously it often feels easier to just push it aside. June 12th is the UN World Day Against Child Labor, and it's not really something to celebrate. Often these days are celebrations, but this is something that's about creating awareness, and from that awareness, taking action and changing. No one wants to think or imagine a child working 12-hour days in dangerous or lethal conditions. Yet this is the reality for 160 million children across the globe, with half of these children in hazardous work. Now let's get something clear. Child labor is not earning some pocket money on the side of a well-supported home and schooling environment. So don't get alarmed and go, oh, well, you know, my child does lawn mowing for this next door neighbor and gets $20 a week for some pocket money. We're not talking about places where children are well supported and they're doing something on side of their healthy lifestyle. Child labor is when a child is endangered at work, when international labor laws are violated, and or a child is denied education in order to work. Some types of child labor include slavery, prostitution, illegal activities, mining, the use of explosives, and unsafe agricultural practices. Most child labor actually occurs in agriculture, with 122 million kids working in the agricultural field, including cotton, nuts, cacao, palm oil, and fishing. Yet there are also over 1 million kids in mines and quarries for things such as cars, construction, cosmetics, jewelry, and banking. In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where almost 60% of world cobalt comes from, there are children as young as 7 working in the mines without any health or safety equipment. Threats to health in these industries include the use of heavy tools, explosives, lead and mercury poisoning, abuse, and contaminated water, just to name a few. 1/10 of child labor occurs in Africa, with 1 out of 5 children engaged in child labor. Asia and the Pacific regions come in at second, with 7% of children in child labor. And these two regions combined account for 9 out of 10 children in labor across the globe. Other countries where we find child labor are the Americas, Europe, Central Asia, and the Arab states. So you might ask, what is being done about child labor at a global level? This year's theme for the United Nations World Day Against Child Labor is Social Justice for All, End Child Labor. Here, the United Nations are calling for international action through the proposed Global Coalition for Social Justice. They are also working towards the universalization across the globe of the International Labour Organization's minimum age for working, which currently stands at 18 in regards to jobs that are of a high health risk. There is also a Durban call to action, which is a call to eliminating child labour, with priority given to the worst kinds of child labour, as well as implementing children's right to education. So what can we do? What could we possibly do to ensure that we don't exacerbate inequity, inequality, and injustice across the globe when it comes to the environment, when it comes to climate change, child labor, equity? It can feel really overwhelming. And I often find I'm paralyzed in making decisions, especially when it comes to shopping. We won't always get it right because there's so much hidden from us as well as consumers that we are unaware of. But the more we become aware of, the less we shy away from these uncomfortable topics and conversations, the more change we can enable. So here are a few things that we can do to help support the end of environmental injustice. Become aware of child labor, unethical products, injustices, and where it takes place, and share this information with your friends. Just the act of creating more awareness helps to evolve our perception of the world and how we live and make choices in the world. Question brands you like and ask them to make their supply chains more transparent so you know as a consumer you are not purchasing something that a child slave has had to produce or is exacerbating climate change or deforesting another area across the globe. I have a lot of places that I love to use their products, and I'll admit that I haven't done it yet, but I think it's something important, and I'm using this podcast as much as a poke at myself to take more action. But to instead of just boycotting, which is what I tend to do if I don't find any information on the ethical production or about the supply chain of things that I buy, I often won't buy it. There's a lot of things I'm sure I'm still buying, especially in the food department, that may still support these kind of things. But I think it's very important to write to the companies we like and say, hey, I love your product. I really think it's valuable. I'd love to see your supply chain. And if there is something in that supply chain that's unethical or promoting injustice across the globe, I'd love to see that changed. I'd love to keep supporting your product, but if you cannot provide an equitable, fair chain of supply, then I can't support your product anymore. And if people don't have anyone buying their product, they'll no longer exist. So a lot of companies will be pretty keen to change in order. But at the moment, we only hear very small voices about this, so they can continue to hide their supply chains and hide these unethical and illegal trade that we see in a lot of our products. There is an app called the Good On You app. I love using this when I'm shopping. It's predominantly based on fashion. It has a really great rating system. They rate different products and brands on their ethical labor, their environmental impact, and animal cruelty. So you can get on there, have a look at some of your brands, and just see where they fit in that rating system. And if you find that a brand that you love, as I've said before, send them an email. Say, I would love to see you pay your workers a fair wage. Support companies that have a transparent supply chain. So going back, if you're looking at this app or you're looking at a website and finding that they do have a transparent supply chain, then if you can, support them. There are lots of things that can help us to make better decisions. One is seeing certifications such as fair trade, especially in items such as coffee and chocolate, where we know that these haven't always been fair trade and have been based in illegal production. The other thing is choose secondhand, if not all the time. There is so much stuff, I'll just label it as stuff, that goes into our landfill every year. There's so much stuff that already exists. So if we can buy secondhand or go to one of those outlets where they're about to send things off that don't get picked, that's always a better option because they already exist. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Wash, darn your socks. I am laughed at a lot by fellow friends and family because I often have holes in my socks and things like that. But you can always patch them up, you know, especially with socks. No one's really seeing your feet. There's lots of things that we can do. And then, of course, take action. And you can head to a few different places to get some ideas on what actions you could take. The Nelson Mandela Day has a really great page. You can either head to the United Nations page of Mandela Day or mandeladay.com. What can I do? They have some really great ideas like planting food trees and gardens, not only for ourselves, but to sustain and support communities. And studies show that just one tree can help us to feel between 7 to 15 degrees cooler. And something I love that Nelson Mandela said, today we should all ask ourselves, what have I done to improve the surroundings in which I live in? Do I litter or do I protect my surroundings? Do I buy stolen goods or do I help reduce crime? And in the words of Craig Kielberger, who as a teenager started his own charity to support children engaged in child labour, the change starts within each one of us, and it ends only when all children are free to be children. Now, there is a lot in this episode to absorb, and it hasn't been my most upbeat, uplifting, hopeful one. It's uncomfortable. But if it has lit up something within you, then subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss the next episode. You can check out the resources that I've mentioned in this podcast at www.emmahawthorne.com/podcast/injustice. And if you want to connect, you can find me on all the socials as Emma Hawthorne, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube channel, lots of different things. I hope you have a great day. And in the words of Nelson Mandela, may your choices reflect your hopes, not your fears. Cheers, peace, and I'll see you next time.